Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dubont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of room and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Michael Bauer, John Cabello, Brian Lambrecht, Chris Veronis, J.D. Vance, and Sergio Bustros. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont at museum.tv. If you'd like to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And, of course, you can join us on the World Wide Web, beyondthebeltway.com. That is the audio and video portion of this program. And if you can watch it tonight, or if you miss it, you can watch it forever. 71 days to go before Election Day. And this past week, it was a real knockdown, drag-out week between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And Donald Trump called Hillary Clinton a bigot. She came back with a big speech at Reno, Nevada, basically saying that the alt-right and the right and white supremacist groups are taking over the Republican Party and really are they're capturing Donald Trump. Michael Bauer, you are our Democrat this evening. Nice to have you with us. The media today was making a big point of the tone of the campaign. Is it getting too nasty already, or is it good for the body politic?
Well, not only is it getting too nasty already, but I think many people in the media are concerned. We have, as you said, 71 days to go. And if this is the status of the campaign, you know, and it's not even Labor Day yet, where are we going to be by the time we get to the debates in a month? And where are we going to be in 2 months? It is a campaign that will be so far in the gutter, I don't think any of us can even conceive how low this will go.
John Cabello joins us. He is the state co-chair of the Trump campaign, also a state representative and a police officer in Rockford, Illinois. John, are you worried about the tone of the campaign, or is that tone needed to keep the blood flowing through the Trump supporters?
Well, I don't like the negative campaigning stuff. I think we should stay and stick to positive messages. I think there's a lot more positive to talk about than negative. But when we talk about the media loves the negative. And no matter how much positive Donald Trump is going to talk about, they're always going to bring in the negative to make sure that they can sell advertisement. So I think no matter how he tries to stay on a positive message, the media, the national media, is going to bring it to the negative. And, you know, I think Donald Trump wants to take the high road. He doesn't want to take the low road. But unfortunately, sometimes the media is trying to steer it all into the low road.
Brian Lambrecht joins us. He is with the DuPage County, Illinois Libertarians. From a libertarian perspective, because you support Gary Johnson, all this bickering back and forth between Clinton and Trump, how much does it really help?
It's wonderful. It's pure entertainment for everybody to enjoy. And at the same time, all of the anger that comes out of it, the vitriol that these candidates and the campaigns are spewing at each other, it's all over social media. It's a whole new market that people are paying attention to. And it gives us a chance to be somebody that they can look towards and say, hey, there is something else. This is interesting. They're not just yelling out hateful, ridiculous things. They're bringing points out, and we take advantage of that.
Chris Veronis joins us. Chris, you usually, when you're on this program, you're a Republican. You still are a Republican, but you're going to support Gary Johnson because you just can't deal with Donald Trump.
And this past week sort of reinforces it, makes me feel good about the decision. I find myself being increasingly tuned out. You just don't want to watch the guttural yelling that's come to characterize this election. Of course, in some ways it's not surprising if you look at the unfavorable ratings of both candidates. With Donald Trump, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised he's going to be, you know, have this clumsy attack about a bigot, which there's far better attacks on Hillary.
Crooked is a more important... You're not offended by crooked. Bigot is going too far.
There's a whole universe there for Hillary Clinton. And I will say this. People shouldn't be surprised that Donald Trump would be saying these things. But Hillary Clinton, who's kind of putting herself on the high road, her entire campaign is based on eviscerate Trump and run out the clock. And that's it. You could probably add don't look tired. and that's it. This campaign's not based on issues, and Hillary Clinton's a big part of it.
Let me ask you a question. I said a couple of weeks ago on this program that there's a lot of Republicans, many of them who have sat in that seat. I mean, we've had a number of our Republican guests are basically in the same boat as you are right now. And I have argued that when it gets right down to the final moment before you vote, there's going to be so much of the Democratic Clinton machine that's going to be just bombarding people that at the last minute you're going to say, you know what, she's spending too much time eviscerating the Republican Party, and she tried to tie the two of them together last week in a Reno speech.
And so you come back home. I had misgivings about John McCain, Mitt Romney. They weren't my guys. I voted for him in the end. But I don't look at this as this is not a choice for me. These are two people. These are two rich, obnoxious liberals from New York. That's what this race is. That's not a choice for me.
John Cabello, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that a little bit later on. But I want to ask about the other big question of the week, and that is Donald Trump's apparent flip-flopping back and forth several times this past week on his immigration stand. In your view, how much of Trump's appeal and where he is today is because of the hard edge that he had from the moment he announced his presidential run? And is he making a mistake by appearing to soften it?
Well, let me start off by saying that, you know, I am not a spokesman for the Donald Trump campaign. I am not any way, shape, or form privy to his campaign strategies or his policy strategies.
But his co-chair,
I'm just a co-chair of Illinois to try to get, obviously, as many people.
But do you report to anybody? Does anybody report to you? I mean,
there's no
communication.
There are some communications, but I am not here as an authorized surrogate for the Donald Trump campaign. So I want to make sure that we're very clear. I'm always going to tell you the truth.
So the question is, how much of Trump's appeal might be wavering because of the way in which he dealt with the issue last week?
I don't think at all. I mean, I think there's a lot of people in this country that are tired of seeing people come into this country illegally. We have rules. We're a nation of laws. We want people that are coming here to follow our laws. We want the people to be able to come here and get an education. We want them to be a productive member of society. So what I see is Donald Trump saying to the folks that are tired of these folks coming in illegally. And there's got to be a mechanism and a way to stop that.
But here's the question. He earlier in the campaign talked about a deportation squad. He originally said he was going to deport all those that were here illegally. I mean, you're a politician. You're also You're also a police officer. If someone comes to the country illegally, they have broken a law. Mm-hmm. Is the breaking of that law, in your view, sufficient enough to go track them down and move them out of the country?
Well, let's look at it just from an economic point of view.
I'm going to give you a few minutes to think about it because I asked you a complicated question with only a few seconds to go before a break. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast, from border to border. I want to get your reaction to the question I just asked John, because there's a lot of Trump supporters. We have a lot of Trump supporters listening and watching this program this evening. Did anything Donald Trump say last week or do last week, does it make you have a second thought about whether or not he's going to be as strong as you perhaps want him to be on the illegal immigration issue? I'm Bruce Dumont, back from Chicago.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. John Cabello, I asked you the question before the break whether or not, because you're a law enforcement officer, if someone has come into the country illegally, they've done something illegal, they're here, should they be moved out and moved back to wherever they came from if that's the only law they broke?
I would say no. I mean, we've got to figure out how many of those there actually are. We've got anywhere between 11 to 13 million. I mean, how much is that going to cost us for us to be able to do that? Now, I obviously believe that we should do that with the criminals after they serve their time, because, you know, we still need to be watching what the victims have to say, and we want to make sure that the victims are vindicated by the prison sentences that they're imposed upon. So once they're done with prison, yes, we absolutely want to have them sent back to make sure that they never return. But to be able to send 11 to 13 million people back to where they came from because they came in illegally, I don't know if we can do that.
Michael, I want to ask you this question. Okay. Do you think the back and forth of Trump just this past week, including this absurd spectacle that Donald Trump participated in with the Sean Hannity town hall, right. It was almost as if he was crowd surfing. Yeah, well, what do you think? When are we going to do this?
It's a focus group.
It was absolutely ridiculous to watch, to think that a presidential candidate was literally had his finger up in the air on live television. You almost needed an applause meter. But the back and forth all this week, at the end of the week, does it present Donald Trump as someone who may not be as hard-edged as the media now wants to pin him to be, and based on his earlier comments? Or do you think people say, you know what, in the end, he's going to be okay. He's going to have Jeb Bush's position.
Well,
does that help him in some way?
You know, I think that's the play here. And Chris referred to this in the first segment, that this is an effort, I believe, by Donald Trump to make himself more acceptable to moderate Republican white voters. You know, a lot of them in suburbs of larger cities who generally vote Republican. I don't think a lot of them ever thought that he was really going to physically deport 13 million people. And that wasn't...
The true believers did.
The true believers did. But I think a lot of people, I picked up anecdotally, you know, who were doing focus groups and things like that, were always saying, I don't think he's really going to deport him, and I don't think he needs to. But someone has to do something about immigration. The problem we're having in this campaign right now is that we're just exchanging vitriol left and right, and we're not having serious discussion about the serious issues we have, such as immigration, and how to resolve the problem.
Has Donald Trump significantly last week, has he clouded and muddied the waters, Chris Varonis?
What
is he really going to do?
To his detriment, he has, because the play that he was making were to white college-educated voters, particularly women. The black voters are not going to pull a ballot for Trump. They're not, one. Right. Two, he's alienated his own base. So right now, he's probably the worst. He's in the worst position you could ask for, that of a politician running for office.
But where does the base go? Where does the core base go?
At that Hannity event that you're talking about, he was booed.
Yes, he was.
His own audience booed him because they saw what he was doing.
Well, because when he started to talk about that he's met all these people, they come up to him, they talk about the family. You're right. He was booed.
He's now become the very person that he ran against, all those 16 other Republican candidates. You're a politician. You don't
stand
for anything.
So you lose your base, but you're not picking up the suburban
We don't know, because this immigration speech has been delayed. Who knows if it's going to happen next week? And so he is in a very vulnerable position right now, because you've got the Ann Coulters of the world, Rush Limbaugh's of the world, who are really upset with him.
Brian.
And the Sarah Palin.
It was a lost week.
Yeah. What is the position of Gary Johnson about illegal immigration?
This just caught me off guard from where you got. I was ready to go in a different direction with Donald Trump. It's so hard for me to, again, say what the Gary Johnson position is, but looking at libertarianism and what I believe Gary Johnson believes is we think that the biggest problem with illegal immigration is it's illegal. We think that people should be able to come freely to and from the country, be able to work, be able to pay taxes, take part in the system, and not have to kind of go underground or have to hide or try to avoid things. And therefore, that's one of the reasons why people end up breaking.
So you're an open borders guy.
Or what?
open borders?
We believe that borders have to exist. For example, we have legal borders. You know, you can't come into this country and then attack someone or infringe on their rights that you could do in another country where that would be acceptable. We have legal borders that protect people. Protect people from infringing on other people's rights. But the idea of somebody coming here and wanting to work, nobody has a right to a specific job, and immigration helps improve the economy. It brings in more money. People pay more taxes. They spend more money here.
This morning, Mike Pence was on CNN, and Mike Pence brought up the issue of E-Verify. It's one of the first times I've heard the discussion of E-Verify, and I've said numerous times on this program, if you're not talking about E-Verify, you're not really serious about the issue.
Right.
First time they're talking about it.
That's a technical issue that every Republican's for. Every single Republican.
Right.
Comprehensive immigration reform,
it was in
there. Absolutely.
Rand Paul talked about it during the campaign.
Right.
But it's just not as sexy as building a wall or deporting 11 million people. So it just gets lost in the shuffle. Of course, now it kind of comes up, and it kind of looks a little pathetic to me.
Now,
to be talking about a wonky issue like E-Verify.
Speaking about – you were talking about some of the big issues that are not yet on the table. One of the issues that obviously dominates the discussion as far as Democrats are concerned are emails. And there was a big movement last week, 15,000 new emails.
Right.
The FBI is going to be turning those over to the State Department. They have to be out by, first of all, September 15th. Another batch is going to come out in late September. Another batch is supposed to come out by October 31st. These are the things that we know about, and nothing to do with Julian Assange and what he might have. As a Democrat, can this story involving emails, can it get to a point when some of her most loyal supporters or even casual supporters are going to say, you know what, it's just too much. It's just too corrupt. I cannot vote for her.
You know what? I actually don't think so. And I say I don't think so. I wish I had more confidence in my answer. I don't. But I don't think whatever comes out of these emails will affect Hillary Clinton's chances of success on November 8th, because I think a lot of Democrats have accepted the fact that there's a level of distrust and dishonesty, and all that's going to come out of these emails is probably confirmation of that level of distrust and dishonesty, or maybe reinforcement of that distrust and dishonesty. But
some of those that have been discovered allegedly involve Benghazi. Now, is there any new information that could come out about Benghazi that would change your opinion or those that feel strongly about Hillary Clinton?
Truthfully, I think the only thing in those emails that would affect the election, if Hillary sent an email to someone saying, by the way, let me tell you how I killed Vince Foster.
I don't think that anything in the emails matters when it's regards to national security. I don't think Democrats care that much about it. I think Benghazi's been kind of wiped off the table. It's the Clinton Foundation things that really bother, I think, the Democrat base, because that goes back on a lot of promises that were made, a lot of things people believed in. I think that becomes more personal with people, the Clinton Foundation things that come out of these emails.
John, can Donald Trump make that a real strong case as long as he keeps his taxes off the table?
Well, I think obviously the emails are a huge issue. When you have somebody at that level of government make that big of a mistake, if you were in the private sector, you'd be gone. You would be gone in a heartbeat. When national security issues arise because of some of the things that you've done with your personal email, you can't protect them the way the government has the safeguards protecting the actual emails in a database that is owned by the government. I mean, they have much stricter and more firewalls than to make sure that nobody can get in. When you're doing this through your personal email, you're putting a lot of our secrets out there for people to hack into. And look, it happened. So if Hillary wasn't running for president, I believe that either she would have been fired on the spot and or charges would have been brought against her.
Let's take a call. Marty in Chicago listening to us on WCGO. Go ahead. You're on the air. Hello, Marty. You there? Marty, going once, going twice. Is line one there? I guess Marty is tired and is not going to be there. Let's talk about another issue. The other issue about the Clinton Foundation, because the Boston Globe and a lot of newspapers have suggested that it should go out of business. Bill Clinton announced that he's not going to stay on. And the question is, if it looks bad now, why was it okay for Hillary Clinton to have that role and for Bill to have that role while she was Secretary of State?
Right, right.
And one of the questions that doesn't get asked, and if it's been asked, I've missed it, where was Barack Obama? There was supposedly an agreement between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton on the rules and regulations of following the State Department. All this, you know what, has hit the fan for the last 3 years. Where was Barack Obama? Why was he not using his power to watch his Secretary of State, who clearly, at least you don't have to be that great a detective, appeared to be violating the agreement that she signed with him?
It's an issue he raised in the campaign in 2008.
What about it?
I think this is an issue of great disappointment to many people in this country, regardless of their party. We go back to Secretary Clinton's first term, and here's her husband, going around the world soliciting donations in the 6 and 7 figures, getting honorarium for speeches in the 6 and 7 figures from foreign interests, and she's Secretary of State. Does anyone actually think that if Michelle Obama had been approached by Aramco, a Saudi-owned oil company, to give a speech for $1 million, that Michelle Obama would have said yes? Of course not.
I want to get everybody's reaction to that. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. If you have not yet gone to Beyond the Beltway, our Facebook page, Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont, we are looking to expand our Facebook friends, beyondthebeltway.com. Go to that. We've had a huge spike in followership and friendship on that. So if you want to know what's happening on the program, and also keep in mind our website, beyondthebeltway.com, whether it is Sunday night or any time during the week, we generally can tell you who's going to be on the show. You can also sign up for our newsletter. All that is at beyondthebeltway.com. But again, the Facebook page, Bruce Dumont at Museum. I'm sorry. Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. Remember that. Let's come back and talk about some of the other key issues. I want to get back to the question about tone. Are you worried, John, because you're an elected Republican state representative? Hillary Clinton made a very strong speech last week in Reno. She, chapter and verse, she went through some things that were associated with Breitbart and Steve Bannon, the new general chairman of the campaign. It painted a horrible picture of things that have been used by some of the right-wing media organizations in a variety of ways. She's described it just so much conspiracy. She obviously is trying to label the entire Republican Party with that brush. Are you worried that she might have some success?
No, not at all. I mean, when you look at the Clinton News Network, CNN, you could just look at and see how they sway things into the direction that they want. And that, I think, is a much larger news organization. So I would say absolutely not.
What about some of the turmoil that has gone on in the campaign? should we worry about if there's turmoil in a campaign? I mean, you know, a number of changes at the top. Should we worry about the management of the White House if he were to get there?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, when you look in and see what Donald Trump has built from being a young man with a small loan for his father until today, look and see how what he's done. It's pretty simple to sit there and say, you know what, there's going to be mistakes along the way. There's going to be times where we hire the wrong person. There's going to be times where the voters hire the wrong person. This is not going to be one of those times. I think it actually speaks volume for Donald Trump to say, you know what, this is the right person for the right time. Out they go. It's time to move. It's
Chris,
time
I want to get your reaction to the same thing, because you're an observer of politics. There's been a lot of turmoil within the upper structure of the campaign. And the question is, how should people read that, if at all?
There is turmoil. I think there's more turmoil to come. Donald Trump's worst enemy in this campaign is himself. He gets in his own way and allows Hillary, for example, time and time again, when she's had serious issues of concern, she's able to duck because all the media fires directed at Trump.
Can he make the this is a question I asked John. Can he make the strong case against the Clinton Foundation as well as the emails? Can he make that case as long as he has kept his taxes off the table?
I think he can, definitely. That's going to be the natural Clinton response. It's a huge issue, but what Trump has got to do is he's got to give the media a day two and a day three story. And a soundbite, an attack, a bigot, is just not going to do it. Because after that, the media's got nowhere to go. If he hires investigators, there's a lot more to this foundation, and Trump is just cutting the surface. And so if he wants to make it an issue, I would encourage him to do so.
Let's go to Marty. I understand our phones are fixed again. Let's go to Marty listening to us on CGO in Chicago or in Evanston. Go ahead, Marty. You're on the air. Hello? Well, I guess we are not on the air. So we're on the air, but we can't hear the phones for some reason. There we go. Go ahead. Marty, take two. Start all over again. Start all over again. Go.
Okay. Hi, I'm actually in Chicago. My name is Marty. I'm a high information voter. And, I hear it's like four of you guys obviously are anti-Trump. One is kind of on the cusp of being pro-Trump, which is equivalent to what the media, the legacy media, is. Polls after polls show that they're 90% plus Democrats. But what I want to address, along with the legacy MSM media, obviously being the propaganda arm of the DNC,
right,
all the hyperbole and hit pieces that started basically as soon as Trump announced, and the New York Times did that 28-piece report on supposedly Trump and the women and all this other stuff that turned out to be bovine scat. I'd like to know, also Hillary attacking what she's calling the alt-right-wing media, when the online media basically now is the only true fourth estate that's left in this country, since the MSM media is a propaganda arm. What I'd like you guys to address, the sunshine is the disinfectant, is why isn't Hillary's feet being held to the fire that she has gone 268 days without a press conference?
Well, by the way, let me just back up. I don't know all the anti-Trump rhetoric that you've heard. There's been some pro-Trump rhetoric. There's been an attempt to have some objective Trump rhetoric on this program. So I will challenge a little bit of your point. But the broader point is that the mainstream media has done almost a consistent hatchet job on Donald Trump. If you look especially at the network newscasts, I mean, they are overwhelmingly anti-Trump. Even if he has a good day, they play a clip of something that he said, you know, that made him look bad before they get to the good news. But my question to you is, I want to ask you to acknowledge a couple of things.
Sure.
The email story, which, again, is an integral, that's part of her permanent record now. The email story involving the server was broken by the New York Times. The story that broke about, the big story that broke about the Clinton Foundation, including an editorial that the Clinton Foundation should be disbanded, was broken by the Boston Globe. These are two bastions of liberal media in the country. And by the way, if you listen to this show, I bash the media all the time. I blast the mainstream media all the time, including the major networks.
They probably jumped.
But do me a favor, Marty. You can make your point, but would you acknowledge what I just said has some accuracy to it?
I will admit that the New York Times and the Boston Globe actually printed some, published some anti-Clinton information. But what
big time.
Going to happen was it was going to be exposed beforehand, and they put maybe a little bit of a balm on it that wouldn't make it as big as a wound as if it came out from some other source, say Judicial Watch, for instance.
Well, again, we disagree on that. But Chris, Chris Veronis has got a comment.
I think what the caller's getting at is this insidious liberal bias in the media, which is absolutely true.
I agree.
No doubt about it. It exists. Do they have it out for Trump? Yes. Are they going easy on Hillary? Probably. Maybe even yes. But we've always known that, and we've always had Republican candidates who, despite the liberal media bias, run and win. And so I just get it.
One.
George Bush, Ronald Reagan. I'm just saying, Richard Nixon. We've had them, and I get tired. I get tired of blaming it on the media. It's just weak. It's called having a message, having a vision, and running a good campaign.
And I believe Donald Trump has that. That's why he's got more votes in history than any other Republican presidential candidate.
That's why he's the last man standing out of 17 candidates.
Right. I agree.
Well, and so you know what I would say to that is that's part of the problem, I think. Donald Trump's never left the primaries. He's got to add an extra 55 million on top of that 14 million in a win. And he cannot get past the primaries.
As I travel the state, and I'm meeting with people constantly, I've got lifelong Democrats coming up to me. I've got lifelong Republicans.
I believe it.
Lifelong Republicans come up to me saying, you know what? Finally, somebody speaks the truth. Finally, somebody is telling us exactly how they feel. They're not sugarcoating it. They're sitting there telling us what's actually on their mind. And that's what I think so many people are finally realizing. That's what we've got to have. We need somebody that is going to tell us the truth without sugarcoating it, saying, here's the way it is, folks. How are we going to fix this? Easy. Right. We're going to fix
Thank
it together.
Thank you for the call. We're going to go to Rich in Salinas, California, listening to us on KION. Nice to hear from Salinas tonight.
Yeah, hi, guys.
Hello.
Listen, I'm a lifelong Republican. I just turned 70, and I don't trust anybody in Congress, probably 4% of 21.4% of the people.
Mm-hmm.
That half the 0.4 to some who that would be. But I don't trust the politicians. We gave them Congress. We gave them the Senate. They lied to us. They didn't do anything for us. And the people are tired of it. We're really sick and tired of the fires going up there. If you can't trust anybody, then we find somebody like Trump. He's not a politician. He hasn't told me something he hasn't done yet. And so I'm waiting to see what he'll do. I'm going to vote for him.
I'll vote for nobody else.
You don't vote at all. Or if you vote for anybody else, let's vote for Hillary. Then we get the Supreme Court we deserve, and the country goes downhill. And who knows what's going to happen.
Rich, let me ask you. Let me.
A Honduran bus driver crashed, killed 10 people, running into a fire truck.
Rich, let me ask you a question. If Donald Trump is elected, this gets back to building the wall and deporting, 11 million people. Maybe not so much building the wall, but the question here is this. If Donald Trump gets elected, he's moved you to be a supporter, to call this program, and you are speaking for millions of people with the passion that you've brought to this phone call. If he gets elected, in all likelihood, there will be a Republican Senate and House that will also be elected. Do you think he's going to be able to do what he says he's going to do, or is he going to be stymied by a Republican Congress, the one that you think is absolutely worthless? Yes or no?
It depends if they're bought off or co-opted already. And if they are, they're going to go along with the system because it's a money-making opportunity for them. They don't want to lose their gig.
All right, Rich, we got to move on. Thanks for your call. 1-800-723-8029. More calls when we roll on from Chicago.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much. About a year ago when the email story broke up, we had someone that called in, and they alleged, and I have, it's something, it's an allegation that I have repeated a number of times over the last year, that there's no such thing as an email that you can delete. Somebody can find it. And again, we've speculated whether, you know, Vladimir Putin has it, Edward Snowden has it, whether the NSA has it. There was a report that the NSA has it. Well, according to a recent batch, a recent story last week, I guess there is some way that you can absolutely positively destroy an email. And a firm by the name of BleachByte on their website, they're very proud that they are keeping the FBI from getting to the deleted emails of Hillary Clinton. That's their new thing. We outskunked the FBI, and so these emails are allegedly gone forever. And so it raises the question, why would Hillary Clinton's people hire such an organization that literally would absolutely, positively destroy these emails if they're dealing with Chelsea's wedding?
Yoga poses.
Which no one wants to see.
So
that's it. So I guess, you know, waiting for this shoe to fall, if there are things that are going to come from either Julian, well, we know that things are going to come from Julian Assange, but we don't know whether, you know, Vladimir Putin has anything up his sleeve. But it's supposedly those emails, again, this is a different group than the 15,000 that is going to be revealed. We got so many emails here, but there's 15,000 that are coming out, but there's some that are absolutely positively gone. Let's go to Sacramento, California. Ron is listening to us on KTKZ. Nice to hear from the capital of the Golden State. Go ahead.
Thank you. I believe about the media polling, but I believe that essentially I think Hillary is basically unelectable, and I think by late October we'll be in some kind of free fall, and for many reasons. You know, Trump won in the primaries, won 4 or 5 million more than any other Republican. Hillary was down by a couple million compared to 2008. She can't handle press scrutiny. And she's missing in action for long periods, who knows where. And her crowds are pathetic and laughable, a handful. But you have the media, this hypocritical Washington establishment media, running interference for her with this onslaught of polling mumbo jumbo. Herman Cain has criticized this for the lack of transparency about the sample and really how many Republicans compared to the number of Democrats.
You know, Ron, I want to just interrupt you for a moment. I think you make a very strong point, and again, to also add something to the previous caller, and that is the fact that Hillary Clinton has not had a press conference. The media has called that to her attention. They could be far more aggressive in doing it. But you know what? If she doesn't want to talk to the press, she's not going to talk to the press. But we are seeing a sample of what her presidency would be like.
Yeah, that's the big. Hillary has so much baggage, so much corruption and character questions. It's loopy that she's even considered it all. And for Republicans on the fence, you know, the Never Trump and the rest of them, the Supreme Court is the main problem.
We have one right here. What about that? He's talking about the Supreme Court, Chris Varonis.
I'm concerned about that. You know, I'm also concerned that Republican presidents have elected justices and, you know, and they haven't been so reliable. You know, those votes haven't really been there. So I kind of wonder sometimes how much worse.
But Donald Trump has come up with a list of the people that he would appoint to the court. Do you like any of those people?
Yes.
And you're a conservative Republican.
Yes. Yes, he has. And again, I'll go back to why I've got a terminal problem with Donald Trump, enough to go libertarian. which is I think he's a fraud. I think he's been on the opposite side of all the issues that he's campaigned for. And that's a big – and this goes way beyond
–
goes way beyond no new taxes. This is – the man does not have a core. That's the problem. And two, I kind of question his competence. You know, he's just getting on the air 8 days ago. The Clinton Super PAC are pulling ads out of Virginia, Pennsylvania, Colorado. There's a boy running one of the counties, a 12-year-old boy running one of the counties in Colorado. That scares the hell out of me. You kind of wonder who's running this campaign, and is it all going to be behind Twitter?
John, let's let John respond.
I could care less how old they are as long as they're doing the good job. And I keep hearing that the kid's doing a very good job. So why would we ever want to
violate child labor?
Tell our youth that no, we don't want you to do something.
But I think we're also losing an opportunity. One of the frustrations many people have with the Trump campaign is that there are issues he could be talking about. I mean, one thing we haven't explored at all in this campaign is Hillary Clinton's record as Secretary of State. The 4 years she spent as Secretary of State. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about her experience. But there's very little talk about her success or lack thereof. And that should be a major issue in this campaign. There should be a major issue in this campaign over something that happened just a couple of weeks ago. The $500 million payment that Iran received on the same day that it released four Americans who were being illegally held. Was that a ransom? Was it not? And the problem with Donald Trump, from my perspective, he seems to be unable to make these issues into serious issues, campaign issues, and stay focused on making these into a national debate.
And is that by design or not?
I think it is exactly by design because, look, nobody's really paying attention. Us, the politicals are absolutely paying attention. But the average person home is not paying attention until after Labor Day. I mean, so we can be sitting here talking till midnight, and we're going to reach a very large group, but we're not going
to
reach everybody.
Last word to you, caller. Last word to you. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Bruce, there was a Roman leader, a famous quote, a nation can survive its fools, but not its traitors. I think Republicans on the fence and those actively sabotaging the candidate and the base, like Dana Perino of Fox, are flat-out traitors, and they should think about what
those
they're
are fighting words, yeah, Chris Veronis.
I'd tell the caller that the Republican Party is a third party. The Republican Party was born in opposition to the Whigs, and here we are, you know. And so the Whigs didn't get some things right. And, you know, this is a
– So you want a new
serious,
party.
I don't – I that's not what I want. But I'm saying when a person is elevated above ideas and principles, I've got a big problem with that.
Ron, we got to say farewell to you. And 1-800-723-8029 is the phone number. I'm Bruce Dumont. In the next segment after the news, we're going to be joined by J.D. Vance. He's written a new book called Hillbilly Elegy. It's all about the movement that is leading to the success of Donald Trump. Back shortly with him after the news. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Saturdays at 4:30 and Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont, we continue with Beyond the Beltway tonight. Thank you for joining us wherever you're listening from coast to coast and border to border. We're now joined by J.D. Vance. He is author of a new book, highly acclaimed, called Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis. It has received quite a bit of national exposure because it deals with some of the questions that a lot of in the media have been asking about is, what is behind the phenomenon of Donald Trump? Where is all this support coming from? And J.D., nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway. I'd like to begin by asking the question, when you look at your own childhood and your upbringing, tell us a little bit about that, and then overlay, if you will, what you think is happening politically in the country right now.
Yeah, well, it was a tough childhood in a lot of ways. So my mom struggled with addiction and with a number of different relationships. So we moved houses a lot. Didn't have a very stable home. Didn't have a ton of money. Didn't have a lot of the things that people I think depend on when they're middle class. Went to a relatively mediocre public high school. But as I said, I think that had a lot more to do with kids like me necessarily than with the quality of the teachers at the school. And what happened is in some ways I made it out because my grandparents intervened in my life and because the Marine Corps gave me an opportunity to do and see things that I wouldn't have had if I hadn't left home. But a lot of kids don't get that opportunity, and a lot of kids feel trapped and stuck. And it's a very pessimistic place because of a lot of the problems that existed in my family existed in other families too. And my sense of where at least some of Trump's supporters come from is from a place that's pretty similar to where my family came from, which is that not a whole lot's working. It's not just about the loss of jobs. It's about what's going on in the family and in the community. And because of that, people are pretty frustrated at the political elites who they feel have power over their lives. And that frustration's really been bubbling. And I expected that it would find some outlet, though I can't say I expected it to find quite the outlet, quite the vessel that it has in Donald Trump.
The media is focused on the angry white male, but within that structure that you're talking about, there are women. To what extent are the women that are in that socioeconomic bind at the moment, to what extent are they feeding this anger as well? We don't hear about black or white female anger.
Yeah, well, it's in some ways, a lot of the women in these communities, they're single mothers. You see a lot more single mothers than you see single fathers. And so it's almost that some women don't have quite the time to be angry. They have to be a little bit more constructive and engaged for the sake of their kids. It's not that there aren't angry women, of course. It's just that I don't think it's nearly as much of a phenomenon as with a lot of men in these communities. So I will say that it's definitely something I've seen in my own community. I think the statistics bear it out that Trump is more popular among men in the white working class than women in the white working class. And that's probably due to a lot of complex factors. I think it's a mistake to reduce it down to anger. It's probably a lot of other things that are going on too.
When you look at what they're angry about and who they blame, a lot of times if things are not going well for someone, they want to blame someone that maybe is a different color, is a different race, a different nationality, higher education, made better life choices than they did. Where is the blame game being played in that sector of the country that is such an integral part of the Donald Trump base?
Well, I think the blame game is being played primarily in the political sphere. People see a Washington elite that is disconnected from a lot of their problems. And so my sense is that most of the anger goes towards the politicians, maybe to financial elites who folks feel can buy their way into the political process and gain special favors. There is undoubtedly an element of racial anxiety motivating a lot of Trump supporters, though I will say that I don't think it's in most of Trump supporters. My sense is that most of the folks who are really supporting him in my community are not super, they're not racist at all. Most of them are not racist at all. But they are very frustrated and in some ways very scared by what they see around them. Their communities are just not working in a lot of ways.
In one way that those communities are not working, we're talking about communities all over the country. We're not just talking about the South. We're not just talking about, you know, the coal mining areas, because your point is that that socioeconomic level, if you will, it exists basically in every state in the United States in a different region. But the core denominators are one and the same. To what extent within that community is opiate abuse, is drugs tearing that community apart, just as drugs are tearing African-American communities apart?
It's a really big problem. And if you look at the statistics, white youth are more likely to die of heroin overdoses than the youth of any other racial group. And, of course, that overdose epidemic is confined especially to the working-class community. So if you go to these blue-collar white communities like the ones where I'm from, it's not uncommon in a single day, even in a small town, for three or four overdoses to happen. I'm from not far from Cincinnati, and it was last week that I believe 31 people died in a few hour period. Or maybe they didn't die, but 31 people had overdoses of heroin in a few hour period. And it's really hitting my community especially hard.
Chris Veronis is here. He is a Republican, but he's going to support Gary Johnson, but he wants to join the conversation.
Well, JD, I have to give you props for the book. I've heard nothing but good reviews, and this topic has been addressed before in the past, but I feel like what you're doing is much more in a non-egghead kind of way. Like Charles Murray comes to mind right away with Coming Apart. What's troubling about this is I feel like in many ways this is sort of like the next domino to drop. To scratch out white and put black in there, and that this is what's been happening since the war on poverty, as far as I'm concerned, to black America. But I want to understand the depth of the problem. And opioid abuse is a big deal, without question. But do you think this isolation, this tribalization that we're seeing here, would it be as intense if there were jobs? If there were jobs with rising wages, would that intensity still be there? And would that make a difference?
JD?
Well, I definitely don't think that it would be as intense. I think that it would take the sting off a lot of these problems. Of course, you just take family breakdown, for example. It's a lot easier to live in a broken home when you also have a lot of economic stressors influencing your life. Though I do think it's important to note that it's not all economic. I think one of the arguments that forms the core of my book is that you have both an economic crisis, and we got to be open about it, we got to try to fix it, but you also have a social crisis. You have a sense of isolation and a number of social indicators that are going in the wrong direction that I don't think a better economy would fix totally. They would definitely help. But I still think you'd have a lot of the problems that I write about, even if the economy really started to take off in some of these blue-collar locations.
J.D. Vance is our guest this evening on Beyond the Beltway. He is author of the book Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis. We will continue with him and also take your phone calls at 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border and around the world on BeyondTheBeltway.com. I'm Bruce Dumont.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. We're on with J.D. Vance. He's author of the book, Hillbilly Elegy. And Michael Bauer has a question for you, J.D.
J.D., to what extent is the communities you're discussing either a successor or overlapping with the Tea Party that had such success in 09, 10, 11, and 12?
Yeah, I think that it's overlapping quite a bit. I wouldn't quite call it a successor, but the sense that I get is that a lot of the folks who were really frustrated with government back in 2008, 2009 were sort of seeing the writing on the wall, and maybe were just a bit out of in front of the frustration and a lot of the anger that you already see in the community these days. So I think not quite a successor, but definitely a leading indicator.
A question that I have mentioned and discussed on this program about 2 or 3 weeks ago is that so many people that your book is dealing with and so much of the phenomenon of Donald Trump is based on people who have now so much – they put so much into the vessel of Donald Trump. And we saw last week a sample that or a demonstration or example that Donald Trump may be backing away from his real strong position on illegal immigration. If Donald Trump gets elected, there's a lot of things that Donald Trump has said that have driven, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of people to rallies all over this country. They will be disappointed if he doesn't deliver on the strong rhetoric. How devastating would that be to the group of people in America that your book is about?
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be that devastated if he doesn't deliver on the strong rhetoric, because I think of Donald Trump primarily as a vessel for a lot of the frustrations I've spoken about. I don't necessarily think a lot of folks believe that he's going to follow through. A lot of the people I talk to back home who are supporting him and are even excited about supporting him will say, on the one hand, I really like that he's going after these elites. On the other hand, I really don't think he's going to change a whole lot. So my guess is that no matter what happens in November, no matter whether Donald Trump wins, whether he wins and follows through or wins or doesn't follow through, people are still going to be very frustrated, because whether we know it or not, and I think we're going to learn a lot over the next 18 to 36 months, there isn't necessarily an easy political solution to these problems. They're still going to be there, and no politician can flip a switch and make them go away. Policy can help us, but I really do think that these problems are a lot more durable than one or two administrations.
You have mentioned in the book, and you've talked about it this evening, about the elites, that it is the elites that perhaps this group of people we're talking about, that they're more frustrated maybe with the elite class. As and this is a personal question, J.D., as someone who made it out of that background with all the troubled family, that's why your memoir is about family and culture, you made it out of that. You went to Yale. You now work for a Silicon Valley firm. You're a success in so many different ways. The people that you work with or have worked with or went to Yale Law School with, Did they look at you differently? Were you treated equally? Or because of your background, were you somewhat, I don't want to say looked down on, but treated differently?
Some people definitely looked down on me and treated me differently. Though I will say, as much as I was worried about being an outsider or feeling like a dumb redneck among all of these really elite people, most people were very, very kind and welcoming to me. And I think that strikes at the heart of a lot of this elite frustration and what's driving it. My sense is not that most of the elite, certainly some of them, look down on white working class folks, but most elites are pretty well-intentioned and are good people. My guess is that we just don't talk that much across classes. You know, you don't meet somebody from Yale Law School when you grow up in Middletown, Ohio, and vice versa. So my suspicion is that a lot of the mistrust and a lot of the anger that exists, frankly, on both sides going in both directions is due to the fact that we don't know somebody from across this political divide. And again, I think that's a problem, but it's not necessarily a problem that I see a very easy solution to. It's too trite to say, well, we ought to spend more time with each other, we ought to talk to each other more. But I don't know that there's another solution to this mistrust that exists, especially in the community I came from.
By the way, today on Meet the Press, a couple of weeks ago, I took a swipe at Chuck Todd because of an interview, the way he conducted it. But I want to throw a bouquet to Chuck Todd today because he said something on the air that I've not heard a national journalist say. And he basically talked about the diversity in a newsroom. He said there should be political diversity in a newsroom as well. And I would add a cultural diversity in newsrooms. And I think probably, J.D., you would agree with that. But Brian Lambert, who is our libertarian, he's got a comment or question for you.
Yeah. Hi, J.D. You said you had a military background, and, you know, I just came off a poll for Gary Johnson, 35% favorability with people currently serving in the military, which is great. And I wanted to know, libertarians are very non-interventionist. We look at a lot of things going on in the Middle East, problems that do need to be addressed, problems that we've exacerbated on our own and we've actively made worse. Most of the people that you talked about in your book looking things, you know, economics, socially, you know, drug-related, what is their stance on things with Syria? Do they care about the nuke deal with Iran? Do they know what's going on in Yemen? Is any of this an issue with those people?
Well, maybe the specifics aren't a huge deal just because, you know, they're like most people, they've got other cares and they don't pay attention to that much to the day-to-day of politics. So I will say this. People are very frustrated with what they see as the strategic leadership of the U.S. military screwing up in the Middle East because, of course, if you look at the demographics, the South and Appalachia contribute a lot to America's military force, and a lot of folks feel that their kids and grandkids are going off to fight in wars that they don't necessarily understand why the politicians keep screwing them up. So on the specifics, I doubt that folks follow it that closely, but on the specifics, and I think this is another – or sorry, generally – this is another thing that's fueled Donald Trump is this frustration, the sense that people who are running the show actually don't know what they're doing and are really screwing up a lot of people's lives.
Chris Veronis has got another question for you.
J.D., there's a big swath of Trump supporters who previous to Trump were apolitical. They're outside the political system. They didn't vote. And it was because of Trump that they got registered and they showed up to the polls. How long-lasting is this? Is it a flash in the pan? For example, could Trump disappoint them and they could just go home next election cycle? Or do you think this is sort of an awakening that they're going to be in the political system as opposed to outside just saying, I don't want to deal with it?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and I don't know the answer. But my guess is that a lot of the anger and frustration that animates Donald Trump's base is still going to be there. It's going to find a political expression one way or another for the next 5 or 10 years. And so it will be a political force that's out there. But it ultimately depends, right? You can imagine a situation where people just feel so fed up with the political process. They don't get angry and vote. They just completely withdraw in the first place. That's sort of my grandma's approach, or was my grandma's approach to politics for a very long time. She had very strong opinions, but she thought they were all crooks, so she didn't vote. You could imagine it going both ways, but my guess is that Trumpism is going to be a political force long after Trump goes away.
Is there also something that's been discussed by a number of journalists over the last couple of months is whether or not there's a silent majority for Trump? You're dealing with a very specific sector of the American voting public right now, but how much empathy is there for that group, and are they likely to maybe come around to Trump, even though if they're in fashionable, you know, cocktail settings around the country, they would be embarrassed to say that?
Yeah, well, there are definitely a big chunk of voters who are probably ashamed to admit that they're supporting Trump, even though that they are. I don't know if it's a large enough group to actually tip the scale of the election one way or another, but definitely it's the case that a lot of these folks are not willing to admit that they support Trump. And I will say this, that there's a bit of an empathy gap towards a lot of Trump's voters, something you may not see expressed that explicitly on mainstream media outlets or among coastal political elites. But I definitely feel that one of the parts that animates Trump's supporters is not this feeling that they're super ideological, but it's this feeling that they're really suffering in a lot of different ways, and a lot of their political leaders aren't very compassionate towards them.
Let's take a call. Let's go to Cheryl listening to us in Austin, Texas. You're on KLBJ, and you're on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Hi, I'd first like to say I'm a woman. I hope that's obvious.
Thank you.
Very well educated.
Thank you.
Graduated magna cum laude with a degree in math, minor in computer science, well, long ago.
Very good.
I have followed Donald Trump most of my adult life. I used to work in New York City almost 5 years, off and on contract basis. People that knew him, worked for him, loved him. I don't know where everybody gets idea that he is a phony. Also, I was at the Hannity presentation show.
Yep.
Here in Austin.
Rally.
I never felt that he flip-flopped, which is what all of the media is saying. Now, he said we have to follow the law, and he said that he'd have to do it in a certain order. Number one would be the criminals that had broken other laws here besides mm-hmm. coming in. I think it would only take somebody without a brain to think that he was automatically, in the first year even, going to find however many people, even though half of them that we don't even know where they are, and get them out of here right away. It has to be a step-by-step basis. Yeah. What might be called flip-flop is that he had the nicety and consideration to ask the audience what they thought. I didn't see him flip-flopping. All I
okay.
heard him say was, you know, and as far as people saying that
we've got to move on. We're moving on not because of what you're saying, but because we have a break coming up. Thank you very much, J.D. Vance.
Okay.
Thank you very much for being with us as well. The title of the book is Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis. Great book. Again, it's a bestseller. And again, I think you'll enjoy it. I'm Bruce Dumont. We'll continue and take a look at Florida politics when we roll on from Chicago.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels. Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight. And joining us right now from his home in Florida is Sergio Bustos, and he is the senior editor for the state of Florida for Politico, which is one of the great sites covering politics in the United States. And Sergio, nice to have you with us via Skype tonight on Beyond the Beltway.
Thank you for the invite.
Tell us right now, where do things stand in the presidential race in Florida at the moment?
You know, as always, the presidential race in Florida is tight. The latest polls show Trump and Clinton within the margin of error on the polls. So, as usual, it's always said, keep in mind the last four presidential elections in Florida were decided by a percentage point or less, and I don't need to remind you of what happened in 2000.
Is one of the things, at least from a Democratic perspective, which is why they think they're very optimistic that they can win the state, is there's been a large influx of Puerto Ricans. Is that correct?
That is. You're absolutely right. The crisis on the island, which again is a U.S. territory, has caused a huge influx of Puerto Ricans to Orlando, the Orlando area. And as your listeners might or might not know, Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens by birth. So as soon as they get here, as soon as they land, they can go right to the registrar's office and register to vote.
Does the current problem down there with the Zika virus, has that given Floridians confidence in or a lack of confidence in the federal government to assist the governor and local health authorities?
I think it goes both ways. I think there's a sense that it fits into that narrative of why can't Congress do anything? The dysfunction is terrible. They left for the summer never deciding about Zika funding. Meanwhile, the Zika crisis continues. It's a huge public health crisis here that seems to be growing by the day. And it used to be confined to South Florida. Now it's expanding to other counties around Florida. And it's only going to grow bigger as a crisis. So there is a sense that, gosh, here's another example of congressional dysfunction.
Michael Bauer is a Democrat. He has a question for you about what's happening congressionally down there.
I know sure. You have your primary coming up next Tuesday, and it's been a bitter fight on the Democratic side for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate. How do you think that the results of that will impact the November 8 election?
On the Democratic side, it's interesting. We thought there'd be a little bit more of a contest, and it has kind of been anticlimactic. It looks like Congressman Patrick Murphy will coast to victory come Tuesday. It's actually this Tuesday. And then on the Republican side, you've got Marco Rubio, who as soon as he entered the race in June, and you may recall that he had said he was not going to run after his failed presidential bid, he cleared the field except for one wealthy home builder in Florida who decided to keep running. But the polls show him way ahead. So it's really a contest between a congressman who's not very well known in Florida and, of course, Senator Marco Rubio, who has a tremendous name recognition.
So you would say that if we were to look to the November, assuming that you are correct, that Rubio will be renominated on Tuesday, that Rubio would have the edge in holding that seat in November?
Yeah, I think you're looking at a contest in November that you have to say Rubio is the front runner.
Chris Veronis is a Republican turned Gary Johnson supporter. He's got a question for you.
Sergio, two-part question. One sure. is, will the Cuban vote be there for Trump?
And go ahead.
And if Rubio wins the general, will he run for governor in 2 years?
First on the Cuban vote, fascinating issue. Over the years, the Cuban vote's evolved. As you all may know, it was always considered a loyal Republican vote for decades, really, dating back to the late 70s and 80s. In the last two elections, beginning in 2008, that vote is now split, meaning as many Cubans vote Democrat as Cubans vote Republican. And the reason is a lot of the influx of Cuban voters in the last decade or so, these are folks that are coming here not with the anti-Castro feeling, not to say that they're not against them, but they're more like an immigrant, like any other immigrant arriving. So they're very focused on who can help me out with schools, get a better job, kind of those things.
John Cabello joins us. He is the Trump state chair in Illinois. He's got a question for you.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to go a little bit one step further. I'm going to ask you about the Latino vote. I am the second ever elected Hispanic to the House of Representatives on the Republican side of the aisle. First ever to get into leadership. We're seeing a large flocking of Latinos. Maybe it's because of the work we're doing here in Illinois, but flocking to the Republican Party and to Donald Trump. Can you tell us what it's what's going on in Florida as to are Latinos coming more over to Donald Trump?
I can say they're not, at least as far as polls are concerned. Again, as I mentioned, the Cuban vote's pretty split. I think it'll remain that way. The Puerto Ricans coming in is an interesting group because the assumption, and I underline assumption, is that they're traditional Democrats. But what we're finding is in register rolls is they're coming in and they're registering as what's called in Florida non-party affiliation. Not an independent per se. These are folks registering, but they're not connecting to either Democrats or Republicans. So a little bit of a wild card. But I would say that Hispanics in Florida are pretty much leaning toward toward Hillary Clinton and the Tim Kaine ticket.
On Tuesday, the people around the country who love politics and read Politico are going to be zeroing in on what's the future of Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Where is that race at the moment? Could she be knocked off?
You know, it's incredible. I for one, was sure she was going to get knocked out by this law professor who is a Bernie Sanders wannabe. And very connected to him. In fact, Bernie Sanders wrote him a fundraising letter, backed him publicly. And when Debbie Wasserman tumbled from the top of the DNC, I thought for sure he would gain. Now, I'm going to say this. I'll go out on a limb, but I think it's going to be a very close primary come Tuesday. The latest polls, however, do show Wasserman Schultz with a pretty strong lead. And I may explain why. As popular as Bernie Sanders was with a lot of Democrats across the country, in that district, Wasserman Schultz district, a lot of Latinos, hugely Jewish, it just was very favorable to Clinton. In fact, Sanders only got about one out of three primary voters. Not a really strong showing for Sanders.
I want to ask a follow-up about Marco Rubio, because when I did my show from Sarasota back in Florida, this was when Rubio and Bush were competing against each other. The feeling that I had from that broadcast was that there was a lot of Republican establishment in the state that thought that Marco Rubio should have stepped aside and not challenged Jeb Bush. Now, since Rubio is now back in the game running for re-election, what can you tell us about the relationship between Bush and Rubio, and is Bush doing anything actively to stick the knife to Donald Trump?
You had some good perceptions there in Sarasota. Nothing's really changed. They are just, I would say that friendship is, or friendship is really non-existent. Mm-hmm. Jeb Bush is not stumped for Rubio at all.
Mm-hmm. And what about, obviously we know that Bush and Trump are not friends, but when you get down to winning the state of Florida, I'm hearing you say that Rubio may have an easier chance to get reelected than Trump might be in more of a challenging case. Is Trump going to need Rubio at some point in this campaign? Might we see the two of them on the same stage at any point?
Well, you know, I've been wondering that myself because they crisscross each other all the time. But it's just not going to happen. Rubio has made it pretty clear he supports Trump's candidacy, but won't necessarily be stumping or campaigning for the billionaire businessman. And likewise, Trump has supported Rubio, in fact, encouraged him to get back in the Senate race when he did in June. But I think beyond that, there's nothing shared and nothing lost between the two.
In this campaign, how much has been made of Rubio's run for president? And our voters basically saying to Rubio, we want you to there for 6 years. We don't want you running again in 4 years. Does that come up in the campaign or in the primary?
Oh, yes. During the primary, yeah. It came again from Carlos Baruff. He's the wealthy home builder. That's the lone challenger to Marco Rubio. And then on the Democratic side, Congressman Patrick Murphy has also slammed Rubio. And it's a pretty fair shot because, you know, he had one of the worst Senate voting records. And the belief is, and it seems so, that in 2020, you'll see Marco Rubio running for president again.
John Cabello's got another follow-up for you.
So maybe is it that the Donald Trump campaign's not getting out there that in Palm Beach that he actually opened up one of the first country clubs to allow blacks, Latinos, and Jewish folks in. I believe there actually was a lawsuit there as well. Is that not getting out to the voters to show that Donald Trump is actually showing initiative on making sure that that Florida is more diverse?
I think what's gotten Trump into trouble more than anything is the H-1B visas he got for Mar-a-Lago Resort. These are those visas where you're legally able to hire foreigners because a business cannot find U.S. workers to employ. There have been a myriad of stories written that, in fact, businesses in Palm Beach and workers in Palm Beach are more than willing to take these seasonal jobs.
Sergio,
I think that's gotten him into more hot water.
I've got to interrupt and say thank you very much for being with us. That's Sergio Bustos. He is with the Florida political editor of Politico, and we thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
It's Bruce Dumont. We're back in Chicago. And again, we're having a little technical problem this evening. So right now, I have no idea who we're going to. And I have no idea whether the caller will be there. But let's take a caller. Gentlemen, pick any caller and let's go ahead. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, I'm the winner.
Thank you.
Bruce, this is Tom in Youngstown, Ohio. This is
yeah.
Over at WKBN. You know, a couple of things. Number one, as far as Trump is concerned, earlier tonight you mentioned that, you're not going to be able to round up 11 million people, and at the same time, you can't build a wall on the southern border. Trump has said on various occasions that it's not just a matter of a wall, but also fence, electronic surveillance. In other words, whatever affects whatever works effectively
right
in a given area. So you know that issue I think needs to be brought up. Arizona proved eight years ago, by just cracking down on the illegals, a lot of them will self-deport. And when you consider that if we had a social security number on a driver's license, but at a federal level, in other words, a photo ID, a computerized system very similar to what police departments have, and really for everyone in this country, whenever you're applying for a job, whenever you're getting any federal benefits, what have you, if a person doesn't have that, just as you would now require a social security number, well then they wouldn't be able to get any type of economic wherewithal in this country. They would self-deport. And then finally, the people that think that, well, you know, this is not a serious crime. Well, in many instances, it's not just coming to this country illegally, which is a misdemeanor, but also there's fraud involved, there's identity theft, and if they're here for any amount of time, it could well be a theft of services, the tunes of tens of thousands, or depending upon the size of a family, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Michael Bauer, do you have any comment on this?
Well, you know, we have this E-Verify system that I don't understand. It requires anyone working to have a social security number, and I just don't understand why it's not enforced or why it's not functional. it should, in and of itself, take care of this problem for anyone working.
Do you? I want to put a hard political edge because this was something that Mike Pence said on CNN today. It seems to me that the clearest difference, there's a lot of clear differences between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. One is on the issue of should we take more refugees into the country, and the other is on immigration, and it's on sanctuary cities. It seems to me, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, Michael, that Donald Trump's position may be the majoritarian position, more so than Hillary Clinton. I don't hear a lot of people screaming that we need more refugees brought to the United States.
Well, you may not hear that, but what are the people who will be screaming this is me.
Okay.
And I feel very strongly, you know, we saw a huge influx of about 70,000 teenage and pre-teenage kids coming from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador between the summer of 2014 and late 2015, fleeing murder and sex trafficking in those countries, coming through Mexico and crossing the Rio Grande. And the Obama administration, to my shock, I have to tell you, is just sending them all back. And they're all coming here seeking asylum. And I'm just in disbelief that we're not providing asylum for these 4 and 8 and 12-year-old kids.
Can I answer that, Bruce?
Yes, go ahead.
Sir, you know, that reminds me of the cat ladies who take in every stray cat, and pretty soon they're out of their home because they can't feed them all and because of the loss of control of the situation that they started with good intentions.
But we created part of the problem in Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador because we started sending back, instead of dealing with gangs, particularly in the Los Angeles area, we started deporting these folks back to their home countries, and where they're running amok without any restrictions on them.
So you would rather have them here running amok?
No, I'd rather have them here in jail.
Well, I mean,
in jail here.
In jail, they were committing crimes, and we should have convicted them of crimes and put them in jail.
How about sending them back if they committed a crime?
Well, the problem is when you send them back, there's all sorts of ramifications as we're seeing. And the question is, by sending them back, do we have any sort of responsibility now that they're murdering all these young kids? Do we have any compassion or humanity in this issue?
We have compassion on a national level, sir, and we've shown it over and over again. But, you know, we're just about breaking the bank here at being compassionate. And I think we, you know, Trump's hit a nerve with nationalism. And it's not racism. It's nationalism. It's taking care of the home front first. And you cannot keep the home front safe and secure and fiscally sound by just extending to anybody.
You're shaking your head, Chris Verona.
Sir, I know where you're coming from, okay? And,
yes.
And I'm telling you, as a conservative and as a Republican, this is a way overblown issue. Illegal immigration right now is a net negative.
What about refugees?
No. Yeah, and I say let them in. Because
from Syria.
I say we've got the toughest vetting system in the world.
Says who?
Says facts. Says facts and figures. Like it's
tell the people well, they that died in California.
Yeah, hold on.
San Bernardino slipped through.
Yeah,
the cracks.
I get it. But you know, what are we going to do? Are we going to rescind tourist visas? I mean, if someone, you're never going to have a 100% flawless system. But I'm just saying, yeah. if we didn't have anemic growth, if we had rising wages, all these issues that we're hearing right now would be an afterthought.
Brian.
We do a lot of things here that cause a lot of the influx of people that happen. Like, just to get on side issues. For example, when we started putting corn in our gasoline, the price of corn skyrocketed around the world. And then in Central and South America, now we've effectively raised the cost of living for people there. Same thing in the drug war. Because of the laws we have on drugs, the prices are artificially increased. And then you have violence in these countries where a lot of the people coming here are fleeing these areas that, in an effect, we created. Same thing with the Middle East, with countries over there. We go and we invade, we cause problems there, we subsidize them, and then we got people coming. We cause it in the beginning, in its infancy.
We are out of time. Thank you very much for your call. We are out of time. I want to thank Brian Lambert. We got to say goodbye to you, sir. We're out of time. Brian Lambrick and Michael Bauer and Chris Veronis and John Cabello. We thank you very much for joining us. This is a Genevieve production produced in association with WCGO and AM 560, The Answer. Our thanks to Dan Dorfman, Fritz Goldman, and tonight Chris Wick for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, good night from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling's now at 888-880-TREE.
If you look hard enough, go off the beaten track far enough, you'll find an America teeming with the unusual, the odd, the downright strange.
I'm Will Klinger, and I'm your guide on a package tour we like to call
Wild Travels.
Join me for a new season of Wild Travels, Saturdays at 4:30 and Sundays at 11 p.m. on WTTW Channel 11.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, John.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.